I'm Jonathan Capehart, in today for Leonard Lopate. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. Band leader, historian, and collector Vince Giordano has devoted his life to the early jazz of the 1920s and 30s. His group, the Nighthawks, is known as the hottest band in New York, and Vince is Hollywood's go-to source for authentic period soundtracks. In their new documentary, Vince Giordano, There's a Future in the Past, directors Dave Davidson and Amber Edwards capture the Nighthawks' moments of glory, as well as Giordano's daily struggle to find work, manage his musicians, and haul a van full of equipment and musical instruments to every gig. The documentary, which opens today at Cinema Village in Manhattan, captures the hard work, endurance, and mania of an artist determined to do the impossible and the sheer euphoria of the music that changed the 20th century. I'm pleased to welcome all three of them here to the show, Vince Giordano and the directors Dave Davidson and Amber Edwards, to our studios. Hello. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
All right, Vince, the documentary is about you. You're sitting right here, so I'm going to start with you. How did you first become interested in early jazz?
I found some phonograph records that my grandmother had, and she was a flapper from the 1920s, and she had a lot of novelty music. She had jazz music. She had a Louis Armstrong record, dance music, and I was listening to the music of my time, which is in the 1950s, and I found it very saccharine and nowhere, using a later term, and this energy and this vitality that was coming from this old phonograph, this wind-up phonograph, was just bit me, and I said, this is it. This is where my direction is.
And growing up in Brooklyn, I mean, as you said, you were listening to the popular music at the time. Were there any other kids you were growing up with who shared the same interest in the music?
No, they called it Little Rascals music or cartoon music, because at that time you went home and watched black and white cartoons,
right,
which were from the early 30s that had that great old syncopation.
And so at what age did you actually start playing this music yourself?
I started as a teenager, sitting in with different bands and just little combos. And that was lots of fun.
Playing what instrument?
Playing the tuba. Uh-huh. I started as a violinist, but that's a long story, which I don't even want to get into. And one fateful day, I was playing with one of my old 78s. I brought the tuba out, and I said, I really want to recapture what I'm hearing on those old scratchy 78s and play it for today and in my lifetime. Why just have it on a recording?
Mm-hmm. And as I said in the intro, you've become the go-to guy for Hollywood when they want to create the sound from that era. I mean, Prairie Home Companion, mm-hmm. Boardwalk Empire, The Aviator, Cotton Club. Mm-hmm. How did this little kid from Brooklyn in the 50s and the 60s get caught up in music from the 20s and the 30s, and it becomes the go-to guy for Hollywood today?
I was just lucky. That's all I can say. I'm lucky because there's fantastically talented people out there. But I was a young fellow, and I didn't mind schlepping around a tuba and a string bass and a bass sax and having all these scores. I have a collection now of 60,000 scores. So let's get this young guy. He's really into it. He's not like making fun of the music, because a lot of people don't want to interpret that kind of music. They say, okay, it's nice, but that's not where I'm at.
Mm-hmm.
But that's where I'm at. So I was fortunate to originally work with Dick Hyman on some Woody Allen films that they used old music. And from there, I was called to do stuff on my own with my own band. And I was fortunate that the film people were working in New York City, which was crazy, too. I mean, you figure you got to be in Los Angeles,
right,
to get that kind of work.
Well, now you have a movie about you, a documentary about you. And as I've said before, the directors Amber Edwards and Dave Davidson are here in the studio. When did you guys first become acquainted with Vince Giordano and the Nighthawks?
Amber's story goes back longer than mine.
Well, Vince actually played my first wedding in 1992.
Wow.
And the marriage did not work out, but the friendship started. And so I was certainly a follower of Vince, and then I had the good fortune to be able to sing with him. I did a couple of shows at the 92nd Street Y. I was a vocalist, and I got to sing with this band. And then all the time I was still working with Dave on various projects. And when we did our Michael Feinstein's American Songbook series for PBS, Vince was one of the many, many characters that we went to visit and interact with. And he was just so compelling that we said we have to go back and do a full thing devoted to Vince.
And so, Dave, what was your vision for this film?
Well, the standard formulas for documentaries, especially ones that deal with historic subjects. And with Vince, we've had something that was really steeped in history, but so alive. I mean, he brings this music back visually and with great power. Most people are acquainted with this music from scratchy old 78s, but this is, as they say, rock and roll prohibition style. When you hear it played live, it's so powerful. It's body music, it's dance music, but it's also tremendously sophisticated and brought a lot of people through a lot of hard times by its buoyancy and kind of forward-looking nature. And not that we felt this when we started the piece, but we may need this kind of music again in a big way.
Yeah. Gee, what are you talking about? I'm Jonathan Caper in for Leonard Lopate, speaking with Dave Davidson and Amber Edwards about their documentary on the third person here in the studio, Vince Giordano. The name of the documentary is Vince Giordano. There's a future in the past. So, Amber, it seems as though Vince and the Nighthawks are sort of experiencing a resurgence out there. And is it tied to, I mean, Dave, you just sort of alluded to the political environment that we're in, but is that it?
That, I think it started.
Or just part of it?
It's part of it. It started maybe 5 or 6 years ago. And, you know, Vince has seen these cycles come and go. And this particular cycle of rediscovering this buoyant music, they like to dress up in the vintage attire. They've learned that it's fun to dance with a partner. This is social music. Mm-hmm. And my view is that we have become so isolated listening to everything with our little
earbuds
and in
our
own little
phones.
Private world. And this is music that you need to get out and dance and drink and talk to people and listen to it as an experience. And when you see Vince live, it is such an interactive thing between the listeners and the dancers and the band. And it is like this beautiful little community. And I think that is part of the reason it's so appealing.
Is this community that you're talking about, do they share characteristics other than the love of the music? Are they mostly young? Are they mostly white? Are
it's
they
completely
mostly
intergenerational and completely multi everything. And mm-hmm. One of my favorite images from the Hot Jazz Festival last time was to see this very young girl in a vintage outfit with tattoos all over her back and arms. And she was doing the Balboa with a guy who was probably in his 70s. And I thought, wow.
As Amber said, these trends come and go. Vince has seen a few cycles. But with this one in particular, another factor that's really at the core of it is this young group of musicians. It's not just the people who consume this, who are entertained by it, and have a wonderful time. There are dedicated 20 and 30-somethings who are coming up. And if they're lucky, if Vince should need a sub in the Nighthawks, they might get to sit in. And that's a religious experience for them.
Uh-huh. So, you know, Dave, Vince has been at this for what?
Over 40 years.
40 yeah. years. Mm-hmm. And that's longer than big band leaders like Artie Shaw and Benny Goodman. What do you think is the key or the secret to Vince's success and his longevity?
Well, to start from the bottom, he'll lift the equipment himself. He should have 11 roadies moving that 80-pound Celeste. But you have to understand, for us as filmmakers, that visual of a man in a tuxedo lifting that piece of equipment says there's a visual story here.
And to see Vince lifting equipment and doing all of these things himself, why do you think that is so powerful?
Well, that's where the story lies. That it's beyond the music. The music is powerful, but here's a person who has all of the attributes of the true hero. He wants something. He'll do anything to get to that, to reach his goals. And It's not about the money.
Right.
It's really about just keeping this alive and not letting this wonderful piece of American cultural history slide off the edge of the table.
And Vince, for you, authenticity is key.
Yes.
Authenticity in the music and the instruments played.
Mm-hmm.
I guess this is sort of leading the witness. Why is that something that is so important to you?
Okay. Well, when I listen to those old recordings, I hear the genius of Benny Goodman or Louis Armstrong or Jelly Roll Morton. And people always went back to those recordings and listened to those solos, a Coleman Hawkins solo, an Artie Shaw solo. And those solos really turned on a lot of musicians. They were compositions. Those musicians, they didn't think of this. When they were playing a jazz solo, they were composing right on the spot. And I think that's important, to keep that composition, in quotes, alive today. And people can learn. And I always say to folks, you've heard us play this or this tune. Now go back to the original recording and listen to the masters play the same composition. And I've had, in the earlier years, open space where people would play their own solos. And it didn't work out. Musicians are in another place. They want to play their solo, their style, and it might not fit in, really, with what I'm trying to do with this 1920s or 30s composition.
Okay, so now I'm thoroughly fascinated. And so if there is one musician or one CD that you think exemplifies everything that you love about the era, that you love about the music that you perform, who is it or what is it in terms of the album?
Oh, that's really hard. That's really hard because I have 2,500 arrangements that I carry with me to every gig.
Every gig?
Every gig. It's 400 pounds of music. A lot of trees died for my band. And I have 60,000 charts at home. So people ask me, who's your favorite singer? Who's your favorite jazz instrumentalist? I can't say that because it's apples and oranges, and I love too many people.
Are you driving around town in like a Brady Bunch van or the Partridge Family or like a nice swank SUV hauling around all these things?
No, it's a very plain
Econoline
van, but stacked to the gills.
So at any point, I mean, I can see the love that you have for what you do, and how much it is clearly a part of you.
Yes.
At any point, did you ever have, not doubt, but just think to yourself, I can't do it anymore. I love it, but I can't do it anymore.
Oh, yes. I mean, we talk about that in the film, that I had to take little spaces away from from doing this. And I worked as an archivist for the RCA company. It was BMG at the time. And I just had to put myself away from it because I'm doing what usually a half a dozen people used to do in the old days, as being a manager, the roadie, the band leader, the singer, the transcriber, the arranger, the publicity department. I can only slice the pie so many slices for each day. And so I had to get away. And I did for a little bit.
But you're back.
Yes.
He's back and back in a big way for the last few years with the help of his life partner, Carol Hughes, who's in the film and really takes on a lot of the extra responsibility so that Vince can concentrate on what he needs to.
Are you able to let Carol do what she needs to do to allow you to have this space? And Dave shaking his head?
No, exactly. I'm saying yes. Oh, sure. I love when people help, as long as they will do it my way.
I knew it. I knew it. There's a control thing here.
They are great partners. Yeah. She is a wonderful support mechanism.
And I love Amber, use band leader. Leader.
Yeah. I mean, somebody has to follow one person.
Are you still playing a regular gig at the Iguana?
Yes, we're there Mondays and Tuesdays.
And the Iguana is where exactly for those who want to come out and see the magic of Vince Giordano?
Yes, it's 240 West 54th Street between 8th and Broadway every Monday and Tuesday. We're not going to be there in a couple of weeks because we're doing something at the Y, Harold Arlen, early years. So come and see us there, too. Let's come see the documentary tonight.
Yeah, I'm going to tell people all about it right now. I've been speaking with musician and band leader Vince Giordano, along with directors Dave Davidson and Amber Edwards, about their new documentary, Vince Giordano, There's a Future in the Past. Thank you all so much for joining us today.
The film opens today
at Cinema Village. That's at 22 East 12th Street. For more information about tickets and the Q&As that our guests will be holding, visit our show page at wnyc.org/lopate.